expression I heard in typing school when I took typing, which was, what was it, 8th grade, 7th grade? I think they're teaching it in preschool now. Anyway, flying fingers. My fingers don't fly. They kind of kick each other in the ass. It's kind of funny to watch. It's even funnier to see what letters appear up on the screen. But anyhow, the idea is the work never stops, and it's just constant. I can't get caught up, but right up to the moment I start talking, I'm trying to put this together. Now, Erica, my partner and colleague, and I are here again, and she has really put some things together, which we're going to cover this hour. Some of them you will be familiar with, and I have never had a problem repeating anything because people don't remember. There's too much garbage out there, too much noise. So we're going to go over some things that are new, give you some new perspectives, give you some new ideas on how to deal with this. But ultimately, it appears not only is there no talk whatsoever about backing off in Ukraine, which is not good, and I won't even mention the word nuclear because you know it, that's what I'm thinking about. But the idea that we're somehow rounding the corner and coming into the home stretch and dealing with the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic, forget it. Forget about it. We're seeing a tsunami of dead and dying people. It is growing. The funeral homes are packed to the rafters. They no longer can have two viewings, some of them at least. They can have one viewing, and then the next. It's not a joke. And you'll see no mention in the mainstream media of Albert Bourla or the former head of Moderna, Boncel. They don't mention these people. They don't mention the shots as causing this huge upsurge in death. You know what's happening, and I know a lot of you have had arguments with friends trying to tell them. But don't argue with your friends. Offer it to them. If they reject it, forget it. It's not worth it. And also remember that if someone disconnects your friendship over a disagreement, they were not your friend. Friends don't do that to friends. Okay? Hi, young lady. Are you there?
I'm here, Jeff. Good evening.
What you been doing? Just kicking back?
Oh, not really. Just trying to keep up with everything.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The shifting sands.
The shifting sands. Yeah, they're burying a lot of people under those shifting sands. So what I think we should do real quickly is just review our last program, which if you didn't hear it, I hope all of you will listen. It has to do with to mask or not to mask. And our recommendation is for both sides of the aisle to mask. If you're vaxxed, your immune system is being destroyed, you need all the protection you can get, even if it's only worth 10, 15, maybe 20%. Yes, masks can stop particles smaller than their 0.003 opening. How do they do it? Well, the small items attach to something else, and they become bigger items. That's one way. The other way is they move in diagonals. They don't move in a perfectly straight, perpendicular line to the opening and weave their way through it. It's not how it works. So the masks can capture things smaller than 003. All right? That's your baseline benchmark. That's what people talk about, 003. No, it can catch things that are 0.001. And I assume that's microns, correct?
Yes, microns.
All right. Now, what we recommend is that the vaxxed and obviously the unvaxxed wear masks. Do we recommend you wear them all day? Are you crazy? No. You wear them when you're around other people, in a store, in a shop, right? And God help it, if it's in a car, that's not good. But no, we don't want people to be breathing their filthy, moldy, dirty mask CO2. That's ridiculous. We never said that. We would never say that. So We got one email. What do you want us to do? Choke on our own CO2 and body poison emissions? Well, that person wasn't listening. So anyway, that's my take on it. Anything you add to that?
Well, I do want to point out, I know it does seem paranoid, but remember, there's a depopulation agenda underway, and part of it, because they can't force this shot into everybody, they're relying on human-to-human transmission to accomplish some of this. And because we have a plethora of people now with failing immune systems, we're going to see a lot more in terms of bacterial illnesses, tuberculosis, maybe diphtheria, and a raft of other ones. Who knows? But that's going to be out there, too. And, you know, if you can afford yourself a little bit of protection when you're in crowded places or just try to avoid them, that you're going to be better off. Because this isn't over. It's not over by a long shot.
Now, I mentioned Monday we were going to present something for you tonight. Technicalities Friday, I promise, and it'll be well worth the wait. So please hang in there. Be with us on Friday. You're going to want to know about this object, this little tool. Okay. HIV. HIV. We believe there will be an effort, in fact, there already is, to blame the vax-caused destruction of your immune system on HIV infection. Not necessarily the case. This is going to be a real Donnybrook, I think, between both sides. They're going to try and blame AIDS on HIV. We know that the HIV tests can be triggered. Well, explain how an HIV test can be triggered, if you would, with less than a full virus.
Well, the screening tests for HIV are looking for one particular protein. That's kind of the signature of HIV. But that's it, just one protein. So if that test turns positive, then you need to take it a step further and look for several of the proteins that are known to be a part of HIV.
You must get confirmation. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You can't make any sort of rash decisions on a screening test. It needs confirmatory testing. But the screening test, again, it's looking for one protein, and there can be a variety of reasons why that might yield a false positive. And one of the reasons we suspect is that because of these HIV sequences that are in the spike protein, that could cause a false positive on an HIV screening test. Another reason can be in the case of certain autoimmune conditions, that can turn that test into a false positive. So don't take it at face value. It needs further confirmation to find out if it's actually the virus HIV or if it's just a protein that's common to HIV.
And that includes the do-it-yourself home HIV test kits, which are all over the Internet now.
Yes,
so
yes.
You've got to be careful. Where just might that single HIV protein be in the human body after a vax is given, after the bioweapon is given? Where that one protein might be hidden in that vax?
I don't know that we know. The human body has 500,000 different proteins. But it has been known to, be elevated in certain autoimmune conditions like lupus or hepatitis.
Don't we think that there's a possibility that it may be included in the spike protein, that one protein?
Oh, it is. Yeah, yes. Yes, that could possibly be in one of these sequences that everybody's talking about, HIV sequences that are present in the spike, thanks to our brilliant genetic engineers who came up with this thing.
Okay, point being, somebody put the, we'll call it a single protein just for the sake of discussion, in the spike, and you got it. You get the shot, you get trillions of spike proteins, trillions of single proteins of HIV. They can trigger the test to go false positive. You don't have the virus. You have a positive test triggered by one protein. So keep that in mind. What else did those engineers build into the spike protein? What other kinds of fun diseases and disorders that you know of?
Well, the one that they haven't jumped on yet, they, meaning the sensationalists, the rabies. There's three sequences of rabies virus in there, the rabies virus family, the G protein for rabies virus. And that would give this virus, this coronavirus, a certain affinity for nerve tissue.
It would also trigger, potentially, like the HIV protein, could it not trigger maybe a rabies test? I don't know.
Well, the thing is, rabies doesn't travel in the blood. It travels in nerve tissue. So there's no way to test for rabies until you're dead, and then they can look at your brain and
I see.
Do a
That's
immunohistochemistry and find
okay.
it there.
Got it. Yeah. So it's a neuropathic...
Yeah, I love it.
It's
neurotropic. Neurotropic.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to this sequence of rabies.
So these
the
people,
G protein.
Excuse me, these whatever they are, built into this spike protein, at least three little pieces of rabies and one little piece of HIV. Years.
Oh
and
no,
years
there's
ago.
Four. Four, wow. four sequences of HIV in there, and
four,
I think
okay.
something like 18 other subunits. You know, smaller sections.
So they
so
did
they
this on
were
purpose,
playing,
is the point. Yes.
They could have been working with what they call pseudoviruses, where they borrow the exterior, the shell or membrane envelope of one virus, and they make a hybrid out of it so that it can't supposedly reproduce. And they work with that in the lab to study the way it infects a cell. And I don't know, but there's some... interesting attributes to this virus.
But it only takes one to trigger an HIV test, one protein, and you can get
presumably,
a false
positive. If we look at that one they were having trials for in Australia, mm-hmm. they were using something called a molecular clamp for the spike protein portion of I believe they were using the adenovirus vector, and they were using a molecular clamp. From the P41 protein of HIV, and that was enough to have the people that participated in that trial turn up positive on an HIV test. And there
Very
was all
clever.
This panic. Do they really have HIV? And then they figured out, right. supposedly, that, no, they're just
okay.
making antibodies to that section.
So please, any of you out there, don't flip out. Demand a confirmatory test, which is available. If your doctor ever or any medical authority ever tells you, you've tested positive for HIV, don't jump, okay? Now, we have a story here. 31-year-old healthy, vaxxed female tests HIV positive at a routine doctor's visit. Now, this, you found this on one of the social media groups, I guess, huh?
This is actually a group devoted exclusively for medical practitioners to share information about treatments and that sort of thing.
Right. All right. Let me read this, and then you tear it apart. This is a practitioner. I am so upset. Saw a new patient today, a 33-year-old female. It was for an annual exam, and by the way, she hasn't been able to get pregnant. She's had two vax shots. My fill-in nurse ordered an HIV test instead of an HSV test for a facial lesion. And guess what? The accidental HIV test came back positive. We are awaiting confirmatory testing now. We screwed up and sent the wrong lab order, and now I have super bad news to share. Do we all need to be testing for this now? I am destroyed by this information and so angry. She is a beautiful and skilled woman, led astray to take the shots, and now with this bad diagnosis, if the confirmatory test comes back positive. You may want to check somebody writes in here and says, you may want to check some CD4 and CD8 counts on her too. Also, I have a friend of a friend, this person is vaxxed, who cannot get pregnant after the shots as well. She and her husband have had one baby. but nada after the shots. She had a TVUS, and they told her she only has 6 eggs left. That's it. These shots have basically disintegrated her eggs. Wondering if others are seeing this as well. And somebody says, I guess the sterilizing the world conspiracy has come true. So there you go. So doctors make mistakes. They gave her the wrong test.
But look what it turned up.
Yep.
So, yeah, the HSV that they wanted to order would have been a test for herpes simplex virus. She had a lesion on her face, so they wanted to figure out if it was caused by herpes simplex.
Right.
Yeah. But instead, they accidentally ordered an HIV one, and lo and behold, it's positive. So, yeah, well, the jury's out on this. We'll stay tuned and see if there's any further news on it. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of false positives because they're only looking for this one protein. We know the protein is very likely in the spike protein and could trigger a false positive. But nevertheless, it doesn't mean that she couldn't be suffering some sort of immune deficiency. That's why this other practitioner recommended checking the CD4 and CD8 counts. Those are T cells, and when those are low, you're very susceptible to infections. And that is an indication of immune suppression, if not immune deficiency.
So lots and lots of fun ahead. This thing gets to be more complex and sophisticated and trouble all the time. This meaning the plandemic. It was planned that way. The monsters that built this mRNA, for example, had a long time to work on it and lots of supercomputer AI help, or I personally believe they may have had help from off-planet. Not that they needed it necessarily, but they were on a time frame agenda, and maybe they got a couple of suggestions. We don't know. I personally know that the governance of this planet doesn't end with the planet. It's connected to off-planet intelligence. That's me talking, not necessarily for anyone else. Okay. What's going to happen here? A lot of people are dying and are going to die. Who's going to survive? What's it going to take to survive? Food? Water? Preparations? In advance? Yes. But Erica has a very smart way of looking at this. And tell us your little thought there. It's almost a little statement that ought to be on a bumper sticker. May end up on bumper stickers.
Well, I can't claim to be the originator of this, but the concept is fitting. It's survival of the wisest, which, oddly enough, was the title of a book written in 1973 by none other than Jonas Salk. So yeah. I think it's true. I mean, we're being tested constantly. And I think if your brain is not engaged and you're not thinking one step ahead of what's being put out there by the media particularly, you're going to be led astray. And I don't care if it's mainstream or at this point alternative media, because that's now been heavily influenced, if not outright corrupted.
Co-opted? Corrupted?
Co-opted.
Trashed? You go to the so-called alt side of the ledger looking for truth and liberation from the mind control you're being beaten with by all the other stations on the other side, MSNBC, CNN, etc. And what do you get? You get conned and programmed there, too. Remember the 80-10, 80-20 rule. Remember, 80-10, 80-20, okay? Always remember that. When you're getting information from the alt news media, you're going to get 80% reality, reasonable reality, and maybe up to 20% bullshit. Maybe 10%. I don't know. But they're not being fully straight with you, not necessarily by design, because they're dumb and they don't know better. Now, some of the big boys, as you know, and we've pointed a few fingers, are financed, obviously, by the deep state. There's no doubt. You can see them. If you can't, you better take a closer look. All right? So what we have now at this point in the game is airborne AIDS and airborne mad cow disease or airborne prions.
It's looking that way. Maybe airborne rabies on top of it.
This is a fun thought. And you don't know you have rabies really until the end stage when you're gone, basically.
That's correct, yeah. You can have a very prolonged course depending on where the virus entered the body. If it entered the body at, let's say, the legs, I mean, it typically comes in through a bite from an infected animal. And it could take, in some cases, I've heard as long as 10 years to go from the leg all the way to the brain. It's very slow moving.
Really? I've never heard that.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
But in these cases, people need to stay away from these tests, these PCR tests as well, because you're harboring all kinds of things in your sinus cavity. You know, I mean, it's you breathe through your sinus cavity, so, I mean, you take air in and things may get lodged there. And then somebody goes and they stick this bottle brush-like thing deep into that cavity and swirl it around and abrade the membrane there. That they're creating a portal of entry for who knows what. I mean, we've all, I think by now, heard or seen people come away from those tests with bloody noses, and in some cases, there was even cerebral spinal fluid because somebody had punctured the cribriform plate there in the back. This is not something that should be done, I don't think, ever, for any reason, certainly not this casual routine testing. I mean, they are creating a portal of entry for bacteria, for viruses, for whatever.
Spike protein for prions, huh?
Yes. So that needs to stop.
No, just refuse the test. And if they demand you have a test, you go buy a brand new box of Q-tips and you take it in and you say, here, open it up. I'll be tested. You're not going to put that bottle brush up my nose and rip up my mucous membranes. Thank you.
Well,
we don't know that they
aren't
carrying things in them as well. We don't know.
That's right. They could be introducing something as well. Or harvesting your DNA.
Well, pretty disgusting. Okay, so airborne AIDS, airborne prions, airborne mad cow. Not a joke, not science fiction, a real problem, a real possible maybe. So, you know, how lucky do you feel? And I again repeat what we've said. If you go into a market, put a mask on. What the hell do you have to lose? 20 minutes? Your body will be fine. And all this allegedly, ostensibly, was predicated on a virus that had somehow made its way over here and had a 99.9997% chance of survival with absolutely no treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You all wouldn't be listening unless you understood the magnitude of the horror that is being perpetrated against humanity and humankind on this planet. There it is.
Okay. You know, and we still really don't know what they are injecting. I mean, it may be the original code for that spike protein, but it's other things too. You can bet on it. And they're synthetic. Synthetic biology is not something your body is prepared to deal with.
Right. Now, there should be, and I'm not sure if it got included or not, and if we didn't, it will be up there tomorrow. Well, that's funny. I asked my webmaster to put two of those red balloons of food factories being burned down in Oregon. And he got one of them in Oregon, all right. Well, anyway. He lives in a foreign country. Let's see. Dr. Luc Montagnier is what I'm alluding to, and we've posted this before, but it's really worthy of taking another look, and tell them what it is, if you would. It's that graph, the Montagnier graph with the 16 patients who tested CJD positive. At least that's what I came up with. Yeah.
Right. So they began tracking this last year after the vax was rolled out. And some, on average, these people that were diagnosed with confirmed CJD, on average, they began experiencing symptoms 11.6 days after either the first or second shot. Some within 1 day, but they, all of them eventually died within 1 or 2 months of this diagnosis. But this is something that was warned about by Bart Klassen in a paper, in silico paper that he generated before the vax was rolled out. And he warned everybody that these prion binding sites are a part of this spike protein, and that's what people are going to be manufacturing. Do we really want to be seeding the population with prion-generating proteins? And, I mean, this isn't conclusive totally that the vax caused these cases of CJD, but there's an awful strong correlation. Temporal.
What else is there? I don't know.
We could say lipid nanoparticles. You know, I think still people are underappreciating their toxicity.
Oh, they've escaped publicity. LNPs, lipid nanoparticles, are very toxic, and no one's paid any attention to them. What do? The so-called alt media, they dredge up all the old timers from the Hall of Fame, right?
Right.
They go back to the beginning. It's nuts. They'll probably pull up hydras again too. By the way.
Oh, maybe. They seem to be short on material right now. So who knows?
Yeah.
I want to say too that this idea of airborne AIDS, not necessarily HIV, but just airborne immune suppression, whatever is being circulated now. I don't know if these cases of hepatitis that are now a major issue with some children
in several countries.
Yeah, we actually talked about this on Monday.
Okay, same thing.
It's becoming worrisome because now there's close to 200 cases reported in children ranging in age from 6 months to 16 years. Now, hepatitis is an inflammation of the liver, and it can be caused by a number of different things. And when there's a virus involved or infection, it's usually hepatitis A, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and there's the lesser known ones, hepatitis D and E. In this case, though, it was none of those, and they've pretty much honed in on an adenovirus as the cause, which is rather unusual.
And this is an eyebrow.
I mean, kids normally get exposed to adenovirus as part of being a kid, and they get sick, they get over it, and they have some either tolerance or immunity to it. And we get exposed to adenoviruses throughout our life repeatedly. And they're so common, in fact, that many people just harbor them as part of their natural virome. The fact that we're seeing these cases of hepatitis caused by adenovirus in children makes me think that these kids may be experiencing some form of immune suppression, like we've seen the adults, the bystanders, experience outbreaks of shingles after being around vaxxed. Is this a situation where the kids whose parents may have been vaxxed are shedding something that's causing immune suppression in the children? Or is the adenoviral vector that was used for so many of these shots, specifically
J&J
the AstraZeneca and the J&J and the Sputnik, has that acquired some kind of replication competence or some chimeric attributes or something and morphed into a new strain of adenovirus?
In other words, what she's saying, this is important, this is supposedly an attenuated adenovirus. In other words, 90% dead, okay? And that's
what
they
use. Not supposed to replicate. It's supposed to go in,
no,
infect the cell, produce a protein, and then that's the end.
That's it.
But there are situations where it may not be fully inactivated.
and might have been constructed in such a way that it could reactivate itself by borrowing things from your body.
It can borrow the genes that were taken out to make it a hybrid, and then just borrow those genes and become replication competent again, and you need to have a productive infection.
Okay, moving on to our next thing, and we really packed this hour for you. Got a really interesting email from a friend, and got permission to read it. I'm going to read two paragraphs from it. First one, friends of mine are losing people, as in dying, like mad, and many report to me with complaints about headaches, muscle aches, low energy, and many other so-called minor ailments. Some have seen cancers pop back up, and others are just dropping dead. The funeral homes are here, very busy here. They have even changed how wakes, I mentioned this earlier, have always been performed. Traditionally in the city, people would do 1 or 2 days and two showings, 2 to 4 p.m. and then 7 to 9 p.m. Now it's one day of a showing of a deceased loved one with 3 or 4 hour showings and then buried the next day. Part of it was the COVID restrictions, but now it is generated from capacity. They're overloaded. They can't handle the demand. The funeral homes do not have enough space. One funeral home down the street converted to cremations only. The situation only grows worse. So there you go. You talk to these people if you know any of them. They'll tell you. Business is good.
That might account for the lack of traffic, some of it anyway.
Well, speaking of that, the next paragraph says exactly that. Speaking of traffic, I have noticed that here too. In other words, the diminution of traffic. Now, it's not everywhere, but there are many examples of this. There is less and less traffic, and rush hour is nothing now. I can drive through the city on the main expressway during rush hour with very minimal delay. As you have said, no one will notice the deaths. People only notice what is in front of them and in their own backyard. Very few people actually look at the world around them and outside their own purview. That's one reason why America is failed. It's a very
so true.
It's inarguable.
Yeah.
Can't argue that. Okay, on to Nick Szabo.
Yeah, this is a paper that we read a number of months ago, and I think it bears repeating. Nick Szabo is the individual, I believe, who was credited for founding Bitcoin. This is the same Nick Szabo, and apparently in 1993, he wrote an essay while he was a student at MIT to a group known as the Extropians. And this Extropian group was sort of a precursor to the transhumanist movement today. But this essay is rather prescient because he talks about the advent of nanotechnology, which in 1993 it was, you know, coming into being, and how it was going to be used to manipulate pathogens, things that are, you know, normally invisible to the naked eye, underappreciated because you can't see them. But they would be used as a weapon for population control. And he basically described a scenario that I think rings awfully true to what we're seeing right now. And I think his advice is somewhat worthy of heeding.
All right, well, let's run through it again. Now, remember, this is 1993, the Clinton administration years beginning, and 1 year before this program began. Central Planning for Ideal Populations, writes Nick. The title of the article is Green Goo, Life in the Era of Humane Genocide. He writes, environmentalists have ambitions far beyond what they can seemingly achieve. Take, for example, the Wildlands Project, which contemplates confiscation and restoration of 50% of the land area of the U.S. Lower 48. Even more ambitious and controversial are the ideal, steady state, or sustainable population numbers promoted by many ecologists. For example, Alan McGowan, a prolific contributor to Science, Biology, and Ecology, promotes his long-range plan for reducing human population nearly two orders of magnitude to 100 million people. I think he's talking about the U.S. here, isn't he?
Could be.
100 million people. Well, two orders of magnitude would knock it down to 100 million, so I think he's talking about this country. And constructs an elaborate ecological and ethical case to justify this strongly pursued goal. The impact of either the overall or differential population reduction on human economics and civilization, irrelevant to many environmentalists, compared to their goal of creating an idealized Garden of Eden on Earth. At the extreme, we have the groups that openly promote the excision of human cancer from the revered Gaia. In other words, the human species on planet Earth. Are they merely dreaming, or do tools exist to make their dreams come true? Next section. Viral coercion. Much has been made of the speculative possibility of gray goo, self-replicating nanomachines that consume most biological and industrial materials, destroying civilization in the process. Grey goo relies on very advanced versions of postulated atomic precision robots capable of fine, very high frequency control over chemical reactions, and is thus theoretical possible in the distant future. But another weapon of replication and destruction is being created in biotech labs today for the specific purpose of population control. These viruses, designed to eliminate species from entire continents and their potentially the entire planet, might well be called, reflecting their ecological purpose, green goo. The first use of genetically engineered viruses for population control has been announced in, Australia. The first use of genetically engineered viruses for population control has been announced in Australia. Biotech engineers say they can completely eradicate two species of mammal, the red fox and the European rabbit, from the entire continent. There's your rabbit, Erica.
Mm-hmm.
There's your rabbit test. And it worked.
No, it worked like a charm. 90% of the population, rabbit population, was wiped out in 2 years.
Previously, viruses were imported from other continents for this purpose. In 1859, overeager British colonizers introduced the rabbit and red fox to Australia. Rabbits soon became a major pest. As early as 1888, Louis Pasteur suggested killing off the rabbits by deliberately introducing a disease. And in 1950, somebody actually tried it. And there you go. Rabbits in Brazil carry a harmless virus called myxomatosis, spread by mosquitoes. But when European rabbits were exported to Brazil, over 99% of them died from this disease. So in 1950, the virus was introduced into rabbit warrens in a remote region of Australia. Ultimately, the disease spread through Australia, moving most rapidly when moist conditions or standing water encouraged the mosquito vectors. At first, the 99% death rate held, but the rabbit and virus population co-evolved into a non-lethal equilibrium. Even so, over 80% of all rabbits in Australia had been killed before the epidemic played itself out. Then he moves to the punchline, human or humane genocide. The virus currently being genetically engineered to eradicate the red fox in Australia can produce more complete results in a more humane manner. The virus turns female red fox's immune system against male sperm, rendering females infertile. This may be the first truly effective green goo, because it is fine-tuned by genetic engineering, and because new viruses can be designed and released to take up where the last virus petered out. These new viruses can overcome genetic adaptation of the target population and reduce it to extinction. Moreover, the creation of such viruses is well understood technologically. Deploying green goo targeted at human populations, either specific races or entire species in general. Did you get that? Let me read it again. Deploying green goo targeted at human populations, either specific races or our entire species in general, would be, like the Red Fox virus program, a relatively simple and inexpensive biotech project, well within the capabilities of hundreds of biotech labs around the planet. Hundreds. You want to finish this off? You following along?
Yep, I'm following along.
Because sterilization.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Got it. Because sterilization is a far more humane form of genocide than gas chambers, some of the ecologists and green activists might have little objection to releasing engineered viruses to reduce human populations to their, quote, ideal level. The humane nature of a sterility virus also makes it far more effective than traditional forms of genocide, which involve visible, violent death and thus stir the passions of people into resistance. A sterility virus not only blocks human reproduction, it also makes an end run around the genetically evolved emotions, which motivate such reproduction. The only defense against such a virus is a rational assessment of its consequences and the ability to motivate extreme, prolonged defense based on that emotionally neutral knowledge. How can we fight green goo? Green goo might take many forms. A retrovirus, herpes virus, RNA virus, DNA virus, protein virus, that is a prion, etc. It might take the form of a humane, very effective sterility virus, or a cruder disease which destroys both the fertility and the health of the victim. At the terrorist extreme, but less effective for the purposes of genocide, it might produce prolonged illness and death, like HIV. Biotechnology has now created a wide variety of viruses for the purposes of research, genetic therapy, and now population control. But it has never been able to cure any kind of viral disease. Sometimes vaccines have been developed within a few years. In many other cases, they haven't. The best personal strategy may be to learn as much about a green goo's disease vectors as early as possible, and then train oneself to avoid the situations and behaviors that tend to enable those vectors. Small, motivated groups might use technology developed by Biosphere 2 and other closed ecosystem projects. We might build largely self-sufficient communities physically isolated from the rest of the planet, at least to the extent of eliminating all possible green goo vectors. People can then maintain a rich, non-physical interaction with the outside world via a virtual reality. The most important survival factor may be recognizing the emergence of green goo as early as possible and taking these paranoid-looking preventative steps as early as possible. Given the current mimetic environment, both ethical and technological, green goo seems inevitable. But while it may take drastic action to avoid, green goo need not achieve its genocidal aims on those who keep a lookout for it and act early and effectively to prevent its spread once it has appeared. Nick Szabo, MIT, 1993.
All right, let me jump right ahead. Check this video out closely now. This is Anthony Patch, Deadly Flu Shots, and Third Strand DNA.
Well, we've all heard of the bird flu, and we've heard of tuberculosis, and we've heard of flesh-eating diseases, and there's a number of things that have been going around in the media the last few years, including AIDS, which is still there, and now we have strange as it sounds, we have a rise to almost an epidemic level now of rabies, which we typically associate with animals. But when it crosses to the human barrier, to the barrier between animal and human, crosses that barrier into the human, there is no treatment, there is no cure for rabies. Now, you may not have heard this. This is not necessarily new, but it's coming to the forefront. In the
you know what this makes me think of?
What's that?
The zombie apocalypse.
Absolutely. And that is the context in which the mainstream media right now is placing it, is in the zombie apocalypse. Because that's exactly how people present themselves, if you will. I'm speaking medically, but that's how they appear and how they behave is like a zombie because of the effects of rabies on the nervous system. There were, last year and even earlier this year, there were actually drills conducted by our government on the zombie apocalypse and how would, you know, first responders, police officers, firefighters, paramedics, how would they deal with these people? So it sounds far-fetched to the average person who hasn't heard this before, but this is nothing new. But let's go beyond the rabies. Let's talk about people getting a flu shot or getting avian flu inoculation. There's another very insidious disease, if you will, which is really a man-made disease. It's a biological construct called MERS coronavirus out of the Middle East. It's the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. It's made its way into Europe to a certain extent, and eventually because of, you know, air travel, it will reach around the world. It's another example of where inoculations or vaccines are being derived, or they're trying to derive for. That, again, I always like to go all the way to the end. What's the purpose? What's the goal? If you have a man-made or engineered virus, why was it created? Is it simply just to kill people? Well, that's one part of it, but if you go further and you go deeper than that, it is to get people to demand a vaccine, a shot, if you will, or a pill. Why would, if you're in a position of control and of power, of ultimate power, why would you want people to demand a vaccine? Well, it's because something's in the vaccine that you want people to then have as a part of their body. Well, what is in the vaccine that you want everybody to have inside their body? It is a DNA manipulator or modifier. I mentioned earlier third strand DNA. There is already, you can find this on the internet, in existence, a third strand of DNA constructed of silicon. Again, we go back to the silicon chip in computers. The third strand is made of silicon and is also coated in gold. If you talk about nanotechnology and nano layers, this is extremely thin coating of gold down to a billionth of a millimeter of gold that is coating the silicon from which you are building a third strand of DNA. The purpose of the gold is to increase the surface area around this strand so that more information can be digitally imparted or programmed. You're essentially, what you're doing is you're creating a third strand of DNA. You are transferring that or imparting it into a person's body through a vaccine that that person's demanding because they're afraid of contracting MERS coronavirus or avian flu or whatever it may be.
Okay, you get it. Now, this is Anthony Patch talking 10 years ago, May the 6th, 2021. He laid it all out. The idea is to trick the people, intimidate them, make them fearful, make them demand that vaccine, so you can introduce into the masses the various DNA or other control mechanisms you want. Pretty amazing. What do you think?
And very prescient for something. That was 2014 that he gave that interview.
2014. It was posted here only a year ago, though.
No, that's because it's been recirculated. It was deleted from YouTube, not surprisingly, and then other people have picked it up and boosted it.
So he's 8 years ago.
Yeah,
wow.
8 years ago.
I wonder if he was...
Some great insights.
I wonder if they were insights. I wonder if they might not have been knowledge that he was passing off as speculation. It seems very well
informed. I don't know. It's uncannily accurate.
It's right on the money, 100%. 2014. Okay, anything you want to add to this? We've packed the hour for all of you out there, and you're welcome to listen to it as much as you'd like. Pass it around.
Well, we'll continue to watch and share notes.
Yeah, we will. Thanks, Erica.
Okay, my pleasure, Jeff. Have a good evening.
Okay, you too. All right, that's it for tonight. Back tomorrow night, and don't miss this Friday. We have much more. Talk tomorrow.